And good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is Greenwood versus JJ Hooligans, LLC. Mr. Shasteen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may approach, and you may proceed.
Before I start, does any member of the court have any questions of me? Not then. The case is a purely legal one, as near as I can determine. I don't think that any of the facts are substantially in doubt. One of the interesting, perhaps most interesting thing is that the fact that what you're going to be looking at for an evidentiary trial for proof
registered or certified?
I'm sorry?
Registered or certified?
I think it's certified.
All right.
You know what? I have to confess, I honestly don't remember the exact word of the statute. I think it's certified.
I think one of the issues is, did they comply with the statute?
I think that's correct. And we are stopped by, I think, first attorney, if a letter was ever sent. All of the evidence is generated by the actions of a computer and its programming, as near as I can tell from the affidavits. You don't have the human involvement that you might ordinarily expect. And when you read a case, which I don't think is exactly on point at all, but the Huska case is an interesting case. It's not about a certified or a registered letter. It's about a letter. But it does set forth some of the evidentiary considerations about letters. And you would notice when you read that case that all of those considerations are activities and or documentation produced by the action of people. But here, you don't have that. It's all produced by the action of a computer. So it's going to present a real problem, I think, for the court, now and in the future, as it presented for me on how to determine the sufficiency of the evidence that would show compliance with the statute. I think the affidavits are defective on their face. An affidavit is to be sworn by a person who has firsthand knowledge that they did something or that they ordered something done or they saw somebody comply with doing that. They don't say that. They just make conclusions that it was done.
Well, this electronic system, how does the person make an affidavit about what the electronic system did?
I have no idea, Judge. Perhaps it would have been more informative had we had an IT, intelligence technology person, come and tell us about that. But that's what I'm getting at. We're using a statute that I think pretty much believed would be used in the context of human activity, filling out your little green card with your address, having it mailed, someone signing it or not, and getting it back.
Is there a requirement that it be signed, a return received requested?
If it's received, it will be signed, because somebody has to sign for that letter to get it. But now,
under what authority?
It is the way the certified letter works with the United States
Postal Service. All certified letters?
I believe so, yes.
Isn't it only a certified letter with the return receipt requested? Isn't that a different?
No, I don't. I think the return receipt requested requires that you actually get the receipt back, but that one is produced is always a fact because someone has to sign for that letter.
The statute doesn't say certified return receipt.
No, it does not say return receipt. But the
interpret the statute to have added on that additional requirement, which is a different class of service.
The purpose of the statute is to guarantee that it was sent, and that if it was received, we know who received it.
Where is that in the statute? I think that
could be the only purpose of the statute. Why would you not just send a regular mail with...
Isn't there a presumption if you put the letter into the mail system, the United States Postal System, that it will be inferred to be delivered?
Well, then if you are treating this as a regular letter, then the Huska case probably does control. And if it's a regular letter, then we're going, if that's how it's going to be treated, we can go back and say, was it properly addressed? Where's the evidence it was properly addressed? I think you can infer it.
Okay. There's no direct evidence. Is there a letter sent to Pies and Pints LLC?
There's a letter claimed to be sent to them, but where is the proof it actually was? Second, you have to have proof of proper postage. That's Huska.
What's the effect of the tracking number from the Postal Service?
The effect of a tracking number from the Postal Service is simply that they tracked something sent to somebody. And had, we might have answered all these questions, and we might not be here, because I might not have challenged this, had the defendant been able to produce any electronic trail that tells us anything about what that tracking number really means. But if you look at the affidavit of Mandy Johnson, she says, we chose to destroy all of that evidence automatically by action of the computer.
So did they choose to destroy it, or was it automatically destroyed by operation?
Well, I think when you, I think when you create, use, purchase, cause to be used a computer program, you need to know what it's going to do. They selected that one. They're charged with knowledge will be destroyed.
And what about the Postal Service? Don't they have a time limit on how long they keep their records?
It's in the affidavit. It's 2 years for the Postal Service, and their program is 3 years. Is that reasonable? That might be a question we would raise. Is that reasonable?
Was the document retention time raised as an issue below?
I don't believe that it was. It's just put in there.
Is it? No. Is it part of the, of an assertion that you may have made regarding spoliation?
Spoliation in time?
Spoliation.
Oh, spoliation. Well, the spoliation allegation comes from the fact that my client asked her employer if they had comp insurance and because she needed treatment. And they go, sure, call this person. She testifies at the hearing. Well, I called them. And I think she testified they called her back after a while and said, well, there's no coverage and we canceled it for non-payment. To me, that puts the company on notice that during the period of this contract of insurance, at least as far as the defendant was concerned, they apparently didn't know, there was a claim that you're going to defend by saying non-payment and cancellation. Once you're in possession that there's a claim and that's your defense, then you have to flag that file and save that so that we don't end up here today. Again, this brings us back, I think, taking us out of the human interactions and activities and back the evidence they would have created.
Back to the spoliation, was that raised before the workers' comp judge?
I don't believe it was. I think I might have argued to the judge about it, but I don't remember, and I glanced over the bill of excess. I don't really have anything further. I think the court understands this.
Thank you very much. Mr. Laughlin, good morning to you.
May it please the court, I'm L. Tyler Laughlin, attorney for First Comp Insurance. Today we're here to discuss what I see as more of a question of fact and the sufficiency of the evidence that was presented to the court below. Workers' Compensation Court's order, the judge indicated that plaintiff is essentially asking for too high of a burden to be placed on First Comp to show that they complied with the statute in canceling the policy. Just briefly, pertinent facts here, a certified letter was sent on November 2nd, 2011 to Pies and Pints. At the same time, notice was sent out to Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court. 48-144-03 subsection 10 indicates for a policy cancellation to be effective, notice must be given to the Workers' Compensation Court and a certified letter must be sent to the employer. Once those items are done, notice is deemed to be given. There's nothing in the statute that requires any type of return receipt or proof that the employer actually received the letter.
You just said deemed to be given. What's the source of that description?
48.144.03.10 is where it indicates that notice is deemed once the court is notified as what and a certified letter is sent.
My question, sir, is what value does certified mail have without the return receipt? How is it any different than anything else?
I believe that it's the certified letter without the return receipt still provides the sender evidence that they did in fact place the letter into the system. yes, I understand the concern is there without the return receipt, there's no indication that the individual actually provided or signed for the letter, but it still gives you as the sender some sort of comfort knowing that you turned this letter over to the United States Postal Service. And it's
turned it over to the U.S. Postal Service inherent and certified?
I believe so, Your Honor. The U.S. States Postal Service is the one that's in charge of certified letter program.
What's the importance of the tracking number?
I think that the importance of a tracking number gives you, the sender, the ability to contact the Postal Service and find out where the letter is at.
Is that confirmation that's been turned over to the Postal Service?
My understanding of receiving that number is confirmation to you as the sender. The document is given to the Postal Service. They provide you with that number, and then you are able to track through their system where that letter is. Part of the problem that we deal with in this specific case is we're dealing with letters that were sent back in November of 2011. The Postal Service only holds records for 2 years. As a matter of business, they are done with those tracking records after a period of 2 years. The system that was used to generate this letter and place this into the Postal Service system and receive confirmation from the Postal Service via that number, electronic computer program, utilized by First Comp Insurance, and those records, as a course of business, are only kept for 3 years.
Counsel, I'd like to question you a little bit about some assertions that you've made this morning about Postal Service procedures. With respect to certified mail, I understand that a return receipt requested provides the sender of the mail with an acknowledgement of receipt. But doesn't the Postal Service require the recipient to sign a postal form that doesn't go back to the sender, even if no return receipt is requested?
I'm unaware, Your Honor, and I don't know that...
My knowledge is out of date, but, you know, when I was a practicing lawyer 25 years ago, I guarantee you that's the way every one of those was. Whether it was return receipt or not, when you walked into the post office, you had to sign a slip to get that certified letter.
And in this situation, Your Honor, there are no cards or documents that are signed. The system, the computer system in and of itself works with the Postal Service, and it's all done electronically. And so those numbers are issued back to the insurance company electronically with the United States Postal Service.
And that sort of leads to my second area of inquiry. The tracking number, aren't tracking numbers electronically assigned to the sender before the piece of mail actually is inserted into the mail stream?
That I do not know, Your Honor.
Well, I certainly know from using electronic priority mail myself, if I can get a tracking number and have a label generated on my personal computer at home, and if I never stick that in mail, I'll still have a tracking number. It'll still show up in the Postal Service's system that one was issued. It just won't show what happened to it.
My understanding of the system that was used in this case is that no tracking number was issued until the item is actually put into the service. That's my understanding of this.
Into the service.
Into the postal system.
Deposited into a mailbox. Taken to a postal facility. Is that what you're telling us?
Those are the items that are outlined in the HUSCA requirements. I believe that the affidavits and the evidence show that as part of the ordinary course of business for First Comp Insurance, these things were all done electronically and put into the United States Postal Service. Part of
is the letter sent electronically, or is the letter put in an envelope and stuck in the mail?
It is all done by a computerized system.
That doesn't answer my question.
The processing system processes that letter, issues that letter, and it is put into an envelope and sent out into the system.
By whom?
Who sends that?
It's an automated system.
By the Postal Service? Is it the Postal Service's automated system, or is it your client's automated system?
I believe it is my client's, Your Honor, but I am not one of them.
So what's the link between, in the proof, between your client's automated system and how it gets to the Postal Service?
I believe that the link has been established in the affidavits by the First Comp employees who indicate that their ordinary course of business is to use these electronic systems and that place this letter within the United States Postal Service.
Who placed?
First Comp Insurance.
An individual or a machine generates it, stuffs it, and puts it in the right spot.
I submit there is nothing in the evidence that Mandy Johnson, who has knowledge of the system, she herself did not personally put that.
Does she have knowledge of a system that would establish tendering this envelope? We'll presume it's an envelope. Tendering it to the Postal Service. What's the evidence that it was tendered to the Postal Service? Because as Judge Castle indicates, it's feasible to generate a tracking number and never use it.
I understand, Your Honor. I believe that her evidence is sufficient to show that it was placed into the United States system, postal system, done via that electronic system.
So Mandy Johnson's affidavit is the key affidavit as far as you're concerned?
I believe her affidavit coupled with circumstantial evidence that the work comp court also received notice of cancellation at the same time period. The court's records indicate that they received notice of the cancellation on November 4th, 2011, and court records indicate that the policy was canceled effective November 19th of 2011.
Do they receive theirs electronically as the statute permits?
The statute does allow receipt of does allow submission of the cancellation to the court via electronic means.
And is that what was done in this instance?
Sure.
So that doesn't really tell us whether it went into the whether the notice to the insured went into the mail stream or not, right?
Not definitively, Your Honor, but one would, if one is canceling a policy, it seems to stem that if you're going to notify the workers' compensation court, you are also going to send a letter to the employer. According to the system and the records that we have, those processes were followed, a tracking number was issued, and now we're almost 6 years after the fact where no records exist to show the tracking of that material. There was questions raised as far as green cards and signing for things like that. Those items simply don't exist.
Let me take you back to the statute in my prior question where you said it's deemed given to the insured. The statute reads, deemed given upon the mailing. So we're hunting around here for the evidence that shows upon the mailing as opposed to the preparation of the document. Is that not this conversation?
Upon the
mailing.
I believe, yes, okay. And that is the issue that we're faced with is the question of the mailing and whether or not the evidence that was provided to the court below is sufficient to show that mailing. And if I may,
I have another question for you, counsel. What is our standard of review in reviewing the worker compensation judge's decision?
Your Honor, I've struggled with that question in preparation for this argument here today. I believe that this is a question of an interpretation of facts to the statute. Counsel is framing this as a purely statutory interpretation and legal question. I would like this looked at from a sufficiency of the evidence and whether there was clear error. However, given that this claim was dismissed for failure to state a claim or a motion to dismiss, I believe that the court's view is no. I've struggled with this question mightily. I'm going to get going with this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for a vote? 1 minute and 51 seconds, Mr. Chastain.
Save the evidence that would have prevented us from being here. So I'm back to my original point. His duty to prove it, and he doesn't have enough evidence in the record to prove that the statute was complied with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day.